from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, when Eve Pell met a charming, handsome runner, she found herself swept into a whirlwind romance. The two fell in love and got married. She was 71, he was 81. In her new book, Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance, Eve Pell tells stories of late in love romances and makes the case that the heart doesn't have to age. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Bay Area-based author, journalist, and champion runner Eve Pell joins us in studio for the second hour of the Forum program. The author of We Used to Own the Bronx, she came from a privileged New York family and became an award-winning reporter who was involved in three PBS documentaries and published in the San Francisco Chronicle, The Nation, Ms., and is a gold medalist in senior track and field competition. She also published in Runner's World. Her newest book is titled Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance, and she joins us for the second hour. Good to have you back with us on Forum.
So nice to be here.
Let me talk first about how this book came into being, because we had Daniel Jones on, the editor of Modern Love, and he just had a column which I want to talk with you a little bit about. And I think it was last Sunday's Modern Love column. Here's the editor writing his own column about what he's learned through all these years, which was sort of his book, too. But your book began just about your own relationship, really. And your article in Modern Love began just about your own relationship. And then that caught the eye of publishers, and it became a project, really, isn't that it?
It was simply wonderful, actually. The column began with my most chutzpah, I guess, as a writer, because I had this relationship with Sam Hirabayashi, who became my husband, and I wrote about it, and I sent it into Modern Love, and they sent it back with a form rejection, and I was furious. I knew this column belonged there. So I cut 100 words out of it, sent it back with a note saying, you've turned this down. I will never bother you again if you turn this down, but have another look. And they did, and it brought a lot of response, including one from a publisher who said, let's turn it into a book.
It was a very compelling and poignant story that you had to tell, because here was this love that came later in life, and it was a love that was, in many ways, a love of a lifetime that had to carry terrible grief after Sam died. And you also talk about that relationship in the book you've published now and how it came into being. And you schemed.
I trapped him.
Yeah, you were on the hunt. And, I mean, it's funny how you talk about that with some levity, but at the same time you say, well, he never found out that you schemed, did he?
No, I never told him. I think he thought it was all his idea, which was my plan, actually.
And it was, as you describe it, very seventh grade.
Well, I had, as you probably know, I've been divorced twice and had not a lot of luck in love.
I remember Feckless George. I told you I'd surprise you with something before we went on the air.
We're great friends, actually.
Yes,
I still see him running.
He's also a friend of mine. Yeah.
But anyway, Sam was an older guy, Japanese-American, conservative, and you couldn't kind of walk up to him and say, hey, you're cute, you want a date? So I called a mutual friend who has a small private movie theater, and I said to her, Janet, you're inviting me to these movies. Why don't you invite Sam Hirabayashi? And when he's going to come, you tell me. This is very seventh grade, but this is what I want to do.
And most of these couples in the autumn or winter, their lives meet through the internet now, don't they?
There's a mix. Three of the couples in my book on the internet. One couple, their children schemed to put them together. Some were people who knew each other when they were young, went separate directions, and got together when they were old. Jackie Onassis's butler is one of those. He's one of the guys in the book. There's a lot of different ways.
Well, you have a potpourri of people in this book, and a lot of them really come off, thanks to your writing, is really interesting in the way they got involved in these relationships and how those evolved. The relationships themselves. I mentioned Daniel Jones. He had an article recently about different stages of love. And essentially he said older love, the kind that you're writing about here, is much more appreciative.
Well, because we don't have that much time left, right? Exactly. We have to make the most of it. There's that. And there's also a sense that you've been through whatever it is that you've been through, and you've arrived usually with huge delight and surprise at a lovely romance when you're old, and you are so grateful.
This is also the biggest dating demographic now, as you point out in your book.
Internet dating for people over 60 is, I think, the fastest growing demographic of online dating. And I guess sometimes it really works. I guess sometimes it really doesn't. But one of my guys, basically, I asked them all, what advice did they have for people? And he said, get on the internet. You have nothing to lose but your loneliness.
Eve Pell is the author of Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance. And there is a good deal of wisdom in this book, including the fact that it's harder for women. These kind of relationships you're talking about here of seniors, isn't it?
Absolutely. For one thing, men die younger, so there aren't as many of them. And for another thing, and this sort of irks me, but it's true, men have more, older men can take out younger women much more easily, it seems to me, and older women don't have as good success with younger men. And on the internet, you'll see some guy who's 75 and he's searching for a woman who's 45.
I was remembering, just as you were describing that, and when I was reading your book, when you remember Cher, one of those names, people have just one name, was dating younger men, including somebody who was called Bagel Boy because he worked at a bagel place. And they said, well, what's this attraction to younger men? And she said, well, their stories aren't as long. We stayed in my mind. It's also... okay by you to use the word old, isn't it?
I think the word old should not be a bad thing. And in fact, I did a KQED perspective on the word old. It's just a fact of life. If you don't die young, you get to be old. And some things, old cheese, old wine, old firewood, old friends, those are all positive. And to my way of thinking, old love is too. And I don't think people my age, I'm about to be 78, I don't think we should be shy about being old. There's good stuff about it, particularly as long as you're healthy.
And you're still running with the same kind of alacrity as you have in the past?
The alacrity has substantially slowed. My times are much slower now, but I still run the Dipsy. My running club has a team of women who are over 70, and we go around and we compete. And there's not a lot of other competition. If we finish vertical and breathing, we usually take home a medal.
Talking with Eve Pell, who has won a number of medals as a runner and nationally ranked distance runner, author of Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance, and also author of We Used to Own the Bronx, Memoirs of a Former Debutante, which he was. The difference between old love and young love gets into all kinds of nuanced territory, but a lot of what you write from the standpoint of wisdom and from your own experience and talking to all these other people has to do with opening your heart more, really, doesn't it?
Yes. I think you have to be willing to be disappointed or something like that. You have to realize that not everything is going to work out the way you want it to. But often when you're old, and it's certainly true for me, you've been through enough ups and downs that if something doesn't work, you're going to survive. You'll live to run to, you know, explore another day. And so for me, it's worth taking the chance. You don't know if your person is going to be sick or die unexpectedly, as Sam did. But you also know yourself better. You know what you like better. And I think it's totally worth it.
A lot of these people grew up in the 50s. And I remember Lily Tomlin's line about the 50s being the decade of foreplay. And the fact of the matter is that many of, I suppose, well, in fact, here, I want to talk about sex for a moment in terms of aging. But I want to hear first seniors talking about sex. This clip is from a public radio documentary called Spirit and Body Willing, Sex Over the Age of 70, and let's hear it.
Some people think that when you get old, you don't want to have sex, or that you shouldn't have sex. And I think as long as the spirit is there and the body is willing, go to it.
They ask me, what do I think about sex, you know? Well, I said, if you don't use it, you lose it.
I think he said something about, I don't know whether I can do it. didn't you?
Yes.
And I thought, oh, come on, you can do it. He did.
Well, you know, they talk about Viagra for men. Now they have medication for women also. Just think, if a Viagra man and a medicated woman get together, there has to be a real explosion.
That was from the documentary Spirit and Body Willing by Todd Melby and Diane Richard. We thank them for that. And you can find more information about that piece on our website, kqed.org/forum. And just to go into this topic of sex for a moment with Eve Pell, and I want to actually have her read something from her book, but I'm going to read something here. She says, in the past, sex was supposed to be simply disappear from the lives of old people. Researchers studying sex didn't bother to include people over 60 or 70 in their surveys until the late 1990s, it being assumed old people no longer had physical or emotional urges. Or if there were such urges, they could be seen as gross, involving sagging bodies wrinkled with age. The glamorous Anne Bancroft, who played the middle-aged Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate, memorably lured the young Dustin Hoffman into bed. Should her behavior elicit criticism for manipulating the youth or win her praise for acting on her needs? She was a pioneer cougar, to this day a highly controversial social phenomenon. Although attitudes toward old people having sex are loosening, echoes of the old taboo remain. In fact, I felt inhibited when asking people what they did in bed, gingerly broaching the subject in emails and phone conversations. In some situations, I was more inhibited in asking than the couples were in responding. I found that while some people had no qualms about openly discussing their sexual practices, others, especially those who didn't want grandchildren reading about their lovemaking, insisted on anonymity before they felt free to talk about what Monty Python called naughty bits.
Very true. I'm a child of the 50s, and I'm definitely inhibited. And when I was talking to these people and interviewing these lovely couples, I really didn't dare ask them about sex. The gay men couple, he brought it up toward the end of one of them brought it up toward the end of the interview and said, well, you haven't asked about sex. And I said, well, do you? And he said, yes. And then I realized I had to have a chapter on sex. So I called them up. And one phone call was quite memorable. I call this guy and I say, Victor, I don't want to put you on the spot or embarrass you or anything, but I do need to have a chapter about sex in this book. And can I say something? Well, he said, of course I do. We just did, on the kitchen table. And so I was surprised that a lot of people were willing to talk about it, that what I loved was how much it meant to people. And whether the couple could do it in the sort of way younger people do it didn't seem to matter so much. Whatever they could do, just like that wonderful radio clip or documentary clip that you aired, people really love it. And I found that, to my surprise, that old love, it's not just about companionship. There's passion.
How'd you find these couples? You really went about, I know you knew some of them, perhaps, or were at least acquainted with them, but...
No, really, I didn't know any. One of them I knew ahead of time.
There's a former poet laureate, I think, who remains unnamed here, who went from being cadaverous to being like a bear.
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Oh, I assumed
Jack Hirschman before. Yeah, no, yeah, somebody else steered me to him.
Because he's been a kind of icon in San Francisco for a long time here.
Absolutely wonderful person. Anyway, what happened was my Modern Love column brought in a couple hundred responses, and some of those people told their stories. But if somebody ever came up to me and said, hey, Eve, what are you doing these days? And I'd say, well, I'm writing a book about people who fall in love when they're old. They would say, oh, my God, you got to talk to my Uncle Jack or our neighbor or something like that. It's just happening all over the place.
And Fitzgerald was wrong, as you point out. There are second acts, or maybe even third acts. You want to read something for us?
Sure. F. Scott Fitzgerald was a lousy prophet. Today there are second and third acts in Americans' lives, and they can be very loving, fulfilling, and even sexy. All the people in this book found themselves alone, either from death or divorce, at an age when, in prior generations, cultural norms would have dictated that they remain that way. But those norms have evolved, especially for boomers who experienced a counterculture that extolled free speech, free sex, feminism, gay rights, Woodstock, SLM, recreational drugs, and more. All these not only granted permission but even encouraged the right to seek personal fulfillment. There are now fewer authority figures to say you can't, you're too old, and besides, it's not seemly. As the book shows, every one of these people could have said no to the search or opportunity for a new partner, but none of them did, and some of them sought out romance by going on the Internet. Others reconnected with people they'd known decades before. I laid a trap for Sam. We're not about to give up on love. We feel alive, wanting connection, and feeling empowered to seek it.
Well said. And there's some blurbs on the back of your book, including Katie Couric, no less, but George Valiant, who is the author of The Triumphs of Experience, The Men of the Harvard Grant Study. And that the results finally have come out, and that study has been, dare I use the word, consummated. It's out in all its full glory. And he writes, I remarried at 75 and have followed 100 marriages from age 50 on. Eve Pell knows what she's talking about. Her book is touching, eye-opening, inspiring, and wise. In addition, it's beautifully written. Agree on all points. But what does this have to do with happiness at that late stage of life when you fall in love?
Everything to do with happiness. And in fact, George Valiant sort of concludes his study by saying happiness is love. He says there are five words. Happiness is love, full stop. And that to him is the answer. And he studied what brings satisfaction and happiness to all these Harvard alums for decades, actually.
But it was Freud who said the two things that bring happiness are work and love. And a lot of the people we're talking about aren't working anymore, right?
Well, that's part of what makes the love work. I mean, when you're old, it's your kids are grown and gone. You don't have them to worry about. Although there's a footnote to that we might go into. But your career is usually pretty well done, and you don't have to be any place particular or accomplish something, and so you really have time to devote to the relationship. You can take a nap, you can take a walk, you can go to the movies, you can really pay attention to each other.
We're talking with Eve Pell, journalist, nationally ranked distance runner, author of Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance, and she's here with the studio. I know there are many of you who have stories and tales to tell, and we'll invite you to join the program. In fact, let me do that now. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to talk with us and join the conversation or bring in your own experiences, quick narratives are always welcome and, in fact, invited. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. We do invite your calls. And again, you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786. May not even be tales that you personally have gone through, but maybe parents, grandparents, or whatever. And talking about life-changing, transforming, you know, as deep as it gets kind of love in so many of these instances that these couples that Eve pretty much transcribed stories of have to tell. You may have your own tales to tell, or you may just have questions or comments about love coming at what we call the senior status of life. Again, you can also join us by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments or stories you'd like to get on the air there. It's kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. You know, I opened, when I got to chapter 2 of your book, there I found Jung. The meeting of two personalities is like the contact of two chemical substances. If there is any reaction, both are transformed. And we're not talking about transformation here, but we're talking about what allows for that transformation, which is basic old-fashioned chemistry. Electricity has to begin there, doesn't it?
Yes, and one of the chapters in my book that I like the most is sort of about the spark. What was it about the two of you that brought you together? Where did the electricity come from? And the two San Francisco poets... She, Aggie Falk, wrote a wonderful poem about how Jack put a hand on her shoulder, and she said two birds became a tree. She knew from that. Another couple, it was a hug that, as he put it, it was a, am I going to see you again hug? It was a very nuanced hug. And there are just different little things that happened that clicked.
Some of them are pretty idiosyncratic. I mean, they don't even have to be physically meeting. There's this gay couple, for example, when he finds out about croissants and flannel sheets.
Yeah.
That's it. He's gone.
That's right. And it's an internet posting, and he's in love with this guy right there. Boom. That's it. And, you know, they're still together. One thing I just wanted to refer people to my website, which is evepell-writes. I hope, burgeoning advice column. Person wrote in saying, what do I do about this situation that I've run into with my mother and her 90-year-old boyfriend? And there's also space on the website to tell your stories as well. But I love the idea of being a sort of a Granny Abby advice giver, because there are problems that turn up in these romances, just as there are in younger romances, but they tend to be of a slightly different nature.
Well, the problem, of course, was the in your life and your love with Sam was the tragedy of his loss, as you've indicated, and his death. There's a story that you tell, though, about when you were going through grieving about birds crashing, which I found myself paying particular attention to and really quite curious about. Can you tell that story?
I can. This was very weird. I live in Mill Valley. I have a nice bedroom with big windows that look out onto a garden. And after Sam died, there was this bird that kept flying and crashing into the window and going away and flying and crashing back into the window again. It was very upsetting. And I kept thinking, this is Sam. Sam is trying to get to me. It just made me utterly miserable, and I was worried about the bird and what it meant and losing Sam. It's never happened before, and it really hasn't happened since.
It just sounds so woo-woo, you realize, of course.
Well, it does, and it was. And it was my experience. Right after Sam died, I kept thinking I would see him. I would hear the garage door open. I would run around a corner in a trail, and there he would be. Joan Didion writes about this in her book about the year after your husband dies. And
she kept those shoes in the closet, in fact. Yeah.
He's gonna need the shoes when he comes back. Yeah. And I kept thinking, you know, Sam was going to come back. And then after a while, that goes away, but not entirely.
It's called, I think, the presence of absence. Wonderful term from Joyce and Derrida both. Fact is, you mentioned Dan in the book, and you've got you onto another relationship.
I am.
So there is another act for Eve Bell.
There is. I mean, Sam.
You met him in a grieving situation.
He had just lost his spouse. I had just lost Sam, and hospice had a group for bereaved spouses, essentially. And I can hardly believe the time goes so fast. It's nearly 4 years since Sam has died. And the same for Dan. So we are seeing each other and having a very nice time.
We're actually coming up on a break. We'll bring on your calls as soon as we get back and have you join this conversation. In fact, we invite you again to do that. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Other ways to join the program, you can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can go to our Facebook page where you can post questions, comments, or tales to tell, short narratives that you may have about yourself or others along the lines of loving again and loving later in life. And you can do that on our website at kqed.org/forum and just click on this segment. Feel free to join the program. New book, Love Again, Eve Pell tells the story of her whirlwind romance and getting married at the age of 71 and talks about the unexpected joys of finding love as a senior and what life lessons we bring to relationships in our 70s, 80s, 90s. Join the program. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with Eve Pell, author of a new book called Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance, and it's all about finding new love late in life. I think maybe you know, I'm a joke collector of many years. I'm just going to tell one joke, which you probably know, about an older woman who's sitting alone on a bench, and a gentleman comes and sits down next to her, and he looks rather disreputable, and he's got a scars all over him and tattoos. And she says, I've never seen you around here before. Where are you from? He said, well, just got out of prison. She said, you were in prison? He said, yes. He said, what were you in prison for? He said, well, I murdered my wife. And she said, oh, single. A little bit of a morbid joke, but, you know, tells the story. In one of Eve's chapters, Carol and Steven, which is subtitled, It Just Works So Well, the gentleman of Carol and Stephen Katz by name, says, I think that love at a young age is wonderful in its innocence, but it is deadly in its ignorance. That's wisdom, really,
I suppose,
what we mean by acquired wisdom. Yeah.
Yes, and that's part of this book that I really like the best is what people learn or become aware of and what kind of transforms these love relationships that are new, but the people are old. People are very thoughtful, and the love is just full of meaning, really. And there are a lot of people like me, so happy to learn from your past mistakes. And one of the great morals of this book to me is that old dogs can learn new tricks, put rather humbly. But somebody who's used to having problems in relationships all lives long can suddenly find themselves really, really happy.
We'll go to our callers, and we'll begin with Dee, who's joining us from Walnut Creek. Hi, Dee.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Well, my story is about 3 years ago. Actually, it was 4 years ago. I was walking down the street in Regent Street in Berkeley with a girlfriend. We were walking her dog, and there was this man standing on his porch. So we went and talked for a while, and I walked across the street with my friend, who was a neighbor. And I said, he seems like a very nice person. And she said, do you want me to do anything? I said, no, absolutely not. I'm a lost cause. Anyways, a year later, this gentleman went and knocked on my neighbor's door and asked for my phone number. And we've been together ever since. And I could never, ever believe that at 75, I could have such an amazing relationship. And yes, they are passionate.
That's a wonderful story, but why did it take him a year?
Well, when I talked to him about that, because I never did forget him, was that he had some things to work out. He was going through a divorce, and he had some family problems that needed to be resolved. So it was very bright, actually. I thought it was smart of him.
Oh, it's a lovely story, and thank you for sharing, as they say in Mill Valley. I appreciate the call. Eve, comment?
Well, this lady is not alone. One of the people in my book, the guy was married. He was separated from his wife. He was a deacon in his church. He was very concerned about how this looked. So he had things to work out, and they dated for a long time, and they abstained from sex for a long time in deference to both their principles. But he got his divorce settled. They got married, and they are just living blissfully in Boston.
You mentioned that you do give advice now, so I think somebody may be taking you up on that. Madeline, hi. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael and Eve. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually, first, Eve, thank you for giving me hope, but at this moment, I'm actually calling with regard to my mother, who's in her 80s. My father has since passed quite some time ago, and I've tried nudging her through the years. And I'm just not quite sure if I would push her away. And though I see myself as a fairly perceptive person, there's also that cloud of our relationship and she being mom. Does Eve have any potential key questions to perhaps further see if she is ready, she might be open, or there's just, as people say, there's no changing her?
Have you talked to her about this? What does she say?
I have spoken to her about it, and she brushes it off. She's a very traditional Catholic of that generation, immigrated to the United States, and I want to be mindful of that. Yet I also see her alone and lonely at times.
Give her a copy of my book. Maybe all these stories of other people who are principled people who grew up in rather traditional moral situations the way we did in the 40s and 50s, maybe she will take some encouragement and feel more permission, essentially, if she would like to, you know, have another relationship. There are some women, I've noticed it more in women than men, who kind of feel they have had enough and they're happy with the way they are. They don't want to have to look after another person, and they are not candidates for a new relationship. So maybe you could see if your mother fits in that category.
And there are a lot of particularly women. You mentioned before the number of widows compared to men are available. I mean, you go on any cruise and you even have men who are hired to dance with these widows because there's so many widows who go on cruises. But they, many of them are just looking for companionship. They're not necessarily looking for, you know, hot time in the bed or anything like that. They just want someone that has similar interests that they can do things with. Yeah.
And they might find the hot time in the bed, too, well, if they find too, the companionship, right. Even though unexpected. But, yeah, there are people who are quite happy being single, and there are some – I never found anybody who just wanted companionship. Either they wanted to be single or they wanted the whole enchilada.
Go to another caller, and that's you, Phil. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Yeah, I've given up on relationships, and I've love. I breakup was too hurtful, and I had been married once and had two live-ins and a lot of relationships in between. I thought it was either me or them. Something's wrong. I gave up on love, but I decided on life. Yeah, keep going on. I joined a tour group to Puerto Vallarta. I didn't know anybody there, but I met my present girlfriend on the first day. She was bubbly and considerate, and I went on the tour the next day with her and stayed with her 7 days. I was 61 then, and I'm 70 now. I wasn't looking, but it can happen.
So when you started off, actually, by saying, I gave up on relationships, this has essentially proven you wrong?
Yes. I mean, I gave up. I just said I'm going to donate my life to my daughters and grandkids, my friends, and I'm going to travel. I'm just going to enjoy life because there's something either wrong with me or them, and it was probably both.
Well, it's interesting. The first adjective you used, bubbly. I mean, she won you over, huh, with her effervescence.
You know, I thought she drank too much, but that was her personality. It was just upbeat.
Right for you, Phil, huh?
What's that?
I say it was right for you, huh?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know what was right for me. It's like looking for a house. You don't know what you want until you find it.
But I think it was wonderful that you, even though you had at that point given up on love, you had not given up on life. And that to me is just really crucial. And you went on this cruise, and obviously you were open because you found this lovely person.
Good of you to call, Phil, and good luck in this relationship, and thank you for the call. I can't tell you how many, especially women friends I've had who have said, you know, this is the end, you know, my age and so forth and so on. I'm not going to meet anybody. And to their surprise, especially coming at them kind of in places they didn't even imagine it to come at them, there would be a relationship.
Well, it's
and even love.
Yeah. And even love, exactly right.
Here's a listener who says, how long did your marriage with Sam last?
Well, it lasted until he died. We were married when the marriage was 3 years, and we had dated a couple of years before that. But from first date until he died was almost 7 years, and it was way too short.
Let me go to some emails here. And by the way, you can join us by emailing us forum@kqed.org. Kitty writes, I'm so glad to hear this session on sexuality of the elderly. I'm a 29-year-old UCD grad who is looking into a career in hospice chaplaincy, so I've been volunteering with organizations that serve the elderly. One of my projects is organizing an LGBT senior meetup in this Tri-City area and educating the community, especially senior service facilities, to be more LGBT senior friendly. You'd be surprised by how many seemingly open-minded people giggle embarrassedly over the idea of LGBT elderly. Eventually, I realize this is because our culture resists the idea of aging on so many levels that we tend to alienate the elderly in subconscious ways. And one of these ways is through rendering them asexual or lacking in gender identity even.
Well, the whole business of sex and romance in nursing homes is a very charged issue. And until recently, I think the overall idea in those places was to not permit those romances and to get in the way and not let people do that. But that's changing. And there's, I cannot remember, it's a Hebrew, Jewish, something or other organization in New York which has a policy of allowing and even encouraging relationships and understanding that the need for sex and touching doesn't necessarily go away. And this actually happened in my own family. My mother had Alzheimer's. We had to put her in a unit for people with memory problems. And she fell head over heels with Bud, who was similarly, you know, impaired in memory, but quite good looking. And my mother remained very attractive, even though she was in her 80s and all. And when I would go and see her, she would be sitting in a chair and probably holding hands with Bud. And one time it was quite funny. I went and she said, "Hi, you know, delighted to see you," gave me a kiss and said, "You remember," and she couldn't think of his name. And then she said, "I don't think I've seen you since we all went to Bermuda together." Well, we never all went to Bermuda together.
It reminds me of, you know the Alice Munro story, The Bear Went Over the Mountain, that was made into a film called Away from Her?
Oh, I've seen it.
It's a powerful, wonderful film. And, I mean, it's about a woman losing her memory, and she develops a relationship with another man, and her husband encourages it in some respects because he realizes how important it is to her.
Well, the famous example of that is Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah.
Whose
husband
fell in
love. Had Alzheimer's, yeah.
And she encouraged the relationship.
Right.
It was very generous of spirit, I think.
Laura says, what would be your guest's advice for encouraging a parent to try having a relationship? Again, we touched on this a moment before, but she goes, my mother is 65, has been divorced for over 20 years. She had several rocky relationships that ended badly since divorcing from my father, and for years now has preferred to live alone. Anytime my siblings or I bring up her trying to date again, she gets very defensive and argues that she doesn't need someone like that in her life. While we admire her independence, we also think it could be really great for her to find love again, but she seems to not want to budge.
Is there anything that she enjoys doing, whether traveling or playing bridge or being involved in political campaigns? It would seem to me that approaching this head on is probably not working. And if you could come at it sort of sideways and get her involved in other activities, that might open her up a little bit.
Let me just read a couple of web comments here. Here's Estelle who says, I'm 83. But when 82 and in a foreign country, I met a very young man whose company I really enjoyed. He caught me very much by surprise when he asked me to dinner, which was simply at a food court. Next date was tea in the afternoon, dated quotation marks. Eventually, he told me he would really like to hold me. And after a serious conversation, he told me he really loved me. We spent a few days together before I returned here. He still calls me. Bree writes, I absolutely agree with Eve Pell. My parents are divorced. My father has had no difficulty dating and dating women who are a lot younger. My mother, however, an active woman in her 60s, cannot find a date. So sad to watch her struggle and accept she will be alone. She's a yoga instructor, marathon runner, hiker. The men who reach out to her on dating sites are much older than she is and are not active. Beer drinking, hunting, football watching men with no desire to hike outside. Why does she have to concede to loneliness because she is a woman in her 60s? It's not just her. I have several friends in their 50s. 260s, who have conceded to single status because they can't find a man to date in their age range. Those men don't even consider them a viable candidate for love because they want a bouncy, young, energetic woman. And I say, stop it. Where's the dating site for realistic men and women above 50 to meet? One that would post an error message to those men who enter an age range 20 years younger.
This question came up at my reading at Book Passage. My friend Katie Butler came up with a website called Our Time, I think was the name of it. And you can only go on Our Time if you are looking for someone who is close to your own age. So
that's a much visited website. I mean, I was reading statistics of dating websites. Got big numbers.
There are a lot of people out there. We're living longer. And one of the truths is that men die younger and women live longer. And it's a little bit, there's not much you can do about that. I don't know whether there was a mixer scheduled at the Book Passage reading before my talk there. And I think there were 50 women and 6 men. So it's a problem. One friend of mine said, oh, my God, we should just all turn gay.
Well, you know, I hear some younger women complaining about this problem, too, of finding a mate here and a serious love relationship or whatever. But the double standard still exists. I mean, you know, a man, particularly if he's well-heeled and has a good deal of money, you know, can find younger women. And that's just a reality.
And there are some guys who are, as they say, looking for a nurse and a purse.
There are, indeed. Sugar daddies and sugar mommies. Let me go to another call here. And that's you, Alda. Good morning.
Hi, my name's Aida.
I'm calling
because I'm listening to the conversation, and I just wanted to add, my grandparents are celebrating their 79th wedding anniversary this year, and my grandfather's 102, my grandmother, he's turning 102, she'll be turning 96, and I've witnessed their love for the last, after 50 years, they had already been married 50 years when I was born. And I just feel like there's something really special about witnessing people at an older age just bask in love, and how inspiring that can be for community, for family. They migrated here from the South in the 50s. And I just feel like it's beautiful to listen to the stories of people meeting at an older age, but I also think it's just as beautiful to be inspired by those that have stuck together throughout all those years of hardship and struggle. And so I just want to add to the conversation.
I'm certainly glad you did add to that, Ada, and I thank you for it. And there's a lot to be said for when people live long enough, lasting love. I'll even mention by name wedding celebration I was at just last week of friends Marshall and Ann Turner, and they've been golden wedding anniversary, and their grandkids were talking about their love and how enduring it was and how lasting and how powerful and how exemplary and everything. It's really very inspiring, you know, to especially younger generations like this young woman who just called.
I think that is simply wonderful. And if I had had my druthers, really, I would have loved to fall in love when I was young with the right person and lived for, you know, 50 whatever years together, have that sense of the intact family, the children, the grandchildren, all that. I think that's just devoutly to be wished. And I wish it had happened to me, but it didn't. And I think the fact that, you know, I got divorced and sort of didn't marry the right person to begin with and had some troubled relationships, it's just nice to know that that happiness is not out of reach for people like me.
Eve Pell is our guest. Her book is Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance. And here's Jill from Sonoma. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I am, I was married very young, and as a result, I didn't really know how to pick a partner, but I thought I'd pick the right partner. I was going to be married forever, just like everybody else, have kids. We did have kids, we were married over 35 years, but then everything was over, and I'm 66 now, and I met a most wonderful man who's exactly my age, who also had been married before and single for many years, thought he'd never be married again. I thought I'd never want to be married again. And we are so happy. We were married on the 7th of January last month.
Well, congratulations. I'm very pleased for you, and I thank you for that call. The call was a little disturbed there with static, but really good to hear these kinds of stories. It's uplifting. It's heartwarming. Another caller on, and that's you, Susan. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, this is Susan. I just wanted to call in and say that my mom and her final partner of about 10 years met at hospice, where both of their partners passed away. And they, all of us children, theirs, Bob's and mine, we were so happy for them. They traveled all over the place. They had both taken care of their spouses for 10 or more years. And boy, they deserved this good time they had together. They didn't live together. They didn't want to get married. And they just thought it was such a joke when people would ask them how long they'd been married. And they'd say, oh, no, we're not married. And, you know, they were sharing a room at a hotel, and they just thought it was a riot. So it was a great, who knew that hospice was a good place to meet people?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a mixer type of place, you would think.
Right. Well, it's exactly the same story for me and Dan. But I wanted to just mention...
I've heard of other couples who met in grieving their spouses, actually. It's not as unusual as you might think. But
one of the things I wanted to pick up on what Susan said was the variety of living arrangements that people work out. They don't always just decide to get married and live together. There's this phenomenon called LAT, living apart together, where people have their own houses, they're madly in love, but they don't want to live together, and they don't spend all their time together. And I think when you're old, it kind of gives you more freedom to work out what suits the two of you.
And let me thank Susan for her call. Here's Esther, who writes, I'm wondering if older people are more tolerant of differences. I myself was nearly a senior when I married my present husband. We're extremely different, but it's the areas where we meet that count.
Well, one of the things that you realize when you're old is, you know, you you get what you choose. And the idea of trying to change somebody or make something more compatible that's less compatible, you kind of learn to accept that person for whoever he or she is. And that seems to be one of the big lessons that comes through in all these interviews that I did with a lot of couples is, you know, if it bothers you that much, don't get together because you're not going to be able to change it.
But when they do get together and there are things that are bothersome or annoying, maybe they're more tolerant, too.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely for sure. And you realize that, you know, something is kind of small potatoes in the overall scheme of things. I mean, one may be liberal, the other conservative, but it doesn't affect the love for each other.
There's also that awareness, especially when you start getting up into maybe not even septuagenarian, but octogenarian and nonagenarian, you know, those years in the 80s and 90s when you realize time is very short and you don't know how many sands are left in the hourglass. And as a result, you can live in many ways more intensely.
Well, the time is so much more precious because you know it's limited. And I think that sort of shadow of mortality acts in a way to make people kinder and gentler and more supportive of each other than they might otherwise be. And you take it really, really seriously, and you don't want to mess with this over some silly thing. So I think, as I said, the word is really precious, and I find that the couples that I talk to shared this sense of that the time was running out, and they wanted to get every bit of good life out of it that they possibly can.
Talking about new love late in life, actually as a prelude maybe to Valentine's Day, with Eve Pell, who is the author of Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance. And let's go to another caller, and that's Ken. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on with us, Ken. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm going to be 70 in a few weeks, and I met my partner just 2 years ago, I wrote a book about this, in fact, The Boomer Guide to Finding True Love Online, because there's so many seniors who are, in fact, meeting through online dating. AARP says there's about 7.5 million single boomers dating online, and it's there's a lot to know about it, but the websites have gotten easier for more user-friendly. And I think there's great opportunity for seniors to reconnect later in life.
Thank you, Ken. Good to hear from you. And let's go right to another caller. And that's Marcy from San Francisco. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
Good. I just had to call in as well because this segment is so close to home. I founded a site called Switch.net, which is companionship, which includes dating, love, romance, and friendship for adults exclusively over 50. We are completely exclusive, meaning we verify your identity and make sure you are, because on the other sites, like Our Time, anyone can sign up, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and it creates the same problems and the dynamics that are happening on other sites.
Well, thank you for that. In fact, we're getting a lot of information from listeners. Here's a listener, right? Your listeners may be interested to know of a creative San Francisco-based organization for LGBT elders, open house. They have education, housing counseling, friendly visitor support groups, etc. The website, Housing Community and Services for LGBT Seniors /open house. Of course, using the internet, I wonder, you know, a lot of young people complain that it's and you hear it from both genders. There's too much Whitman sampling that can go on with the internet. You know, you can meet one person and then just go to another and just, you know, sample all over the place. With older people, especially if they're looking for love, there's a whole different attitude. It's not only because they came up a different way, but I mean of how to use the internet and how it affects them in terms of their choices, wouldn't you say?
I guess so. I'm one of those people who is sort of a technophobe. So there's, I'm sure, all sorts of creative ways to use the internet that I don't use. But in terms of what you call sampling, sort of dating around, I think that when you get older, you really don't have much interest in dating a lot of people. One of my couples, they had been on the internet, and both of them had all sorts of dates going with other people on the internet. But then when they met each other, they had to say to all these other people that they were dating. They'd met the right person, and they were not available anymore. And this brought some anger on the part of the people whom they had been dating, who were essentially being dumped. But my couple, they didn't want to continue this dating thing, and they just really wanted to be with each other.
Here's Mady. Mady, join us. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just had to quickly say my father and my mother were married for 35 years when they divorced. My father then took up with another lady, and they were together until their death, but they were, as you called it, LATs, living apart together, and it was fabulous. She was great-grandmother to my grandchildren, and he was great-grandfather to her grandchildren, and I myself am divorced and never thought I'd get married again. And I'm in my late 50s, as is my husband, his early 60s. And we met, and it's amazing. I mean, it's almost as if we had to go through all the things that we went through in order to appreciate what we found in each other. It's going to make me cry. I'm so happy to have found him.
Lucky you. Thanks, Mady. Appreciate
Thank
your call.
You.
And Eve? Thank you for being with us this hour. Appreciate your being with us.
Well, such a pleasure to be here. I always love talking to you, Michael. It was great.
Likewise. Thank you. The book again is Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance. She's also the author of We Used to Own the Bronx, Memoirs of a Former Debutante. And you can continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum. We are appreciative of your listenership. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Annie Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.